All right, we got everyone. You guys ready to fire off some Sam Darnold hot takes?
Yes,
sir.
All right, let's do it.
I love takes.
Nothing better. Nothing.
I didn't know we were gonna go little first take situation. I didn't know we were going head to head.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
first fake.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I'm not sure who is who in this scenario, but I think it's clear that Justice is Stephen A. Actually, what am I saying?
Unquestionably.
Welcome to the Sound of Troy podcast. I'm your host, Jackson Safon. First, some housekeeping stuff as far as Sound of Troy goes. This is our first podcast of this new season, and my former hosts, Keely Yore, Paolo Ughetti, and Connor McGlynn, have all graduated from USC and have gone on to bigger and better things. So for now, it's just myself. We will be adding a couple other members for some in-season analysis, but as for right now, it's just myself and the three esteemed guests I have today, some smart football minds. We have Kyle Krabs at NDT Scouting on Twitter of NDT Scouting. Derek Klassen at QB Class with a K. He's at a lot of places. Two QBs, Optimum Scouting, Bleacher Report. And Justice Mosqueda at JUMOSQ of Setting the Edge. What's up, guys?
Well, how are you, Jackson?
Thanks for taking the time and joining me for this Sam Darnold exclusive podcast.
Anytime. I'm trying to figure out when I'm supposed to step in.
Oh yeah, no. Feel free whenever. It's just very, very free form. But let's get into it. So Darnold, obviously, he started only 10 games last year, over 3,000 yards, 31 TDs, 9 interceptions. Obviously, the big Rose Bowl game. But from what you guys have seen of him, and obviously you guys have watched plenty, but is there one particular attribute of his or a particular throw even that stands out in your mind as like, okay, wow, this guy's good or this guy could be really good?
I mean, I think we're all going to say that throw in the Rose Bowl, right? Like over back near the end of the near the back of the end zone. Like I think that's the one that everyone kind of points to, like, oh, he has enough arm talent. He can make big plays when he needs to, that sort of thing.
Yeah, if I was going to go off a knee jerk, you know, the Rose Bowl, you know, for better or for worse, depending on where your perspective is with Darnold, it's very fresh in everybody's mind. The way that he lit up Penn State in the second half of that game, it was a memorable performance. It was the last game of the year. So anytime the conversation starts with Darnold, you know, it more often than not starts with the Rose Bowl. So if I was looking through, you know, just agreeing with Derek here, the first throw that comes to my mind, yeah, that dime in the Rose Bowl obviously stands out. But if I'm going to talk about a trait, I was really impressed with his situational maturity, and I don't want to hijack this entire conversation right now, so I'll save some of that for a little further down on the conversation. But there were, like, key game situations in football, like third down and red zone passing, that Darnold outperformed all of his first-round quarterback contemporaries from this past season. So that, for me, is really impressive.
Yeah, I think whenever you talk about college prospects, the one thing people will always point to is look at level of competition. Like, if a guy is playing Alabama, you want to see him against Alabama. You don't want to see him against Jacksonville State, right? Like, you want to evaluate when he's on the biggest stage. And unfortunately for Sam Darnold, the Pac-12 was really down last year. Like I think they had 6 of their 12 teams made it to a bowl game. When you look at other conferences, like I think the ACC put in 12 of their 14, and I think the SEC did either 12 or 11 of their 14. The level of competition that Sam Darnold was going against wasn't stuff that would get him seen by national writers. You know what I mean? He only had 111 attempts against bowl teams during the regular season, and he only threw 5 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Basically, against Penn State, he had as many passing touchdowns against a bowl caliber team as he had the entire rest of the season. I actually ended up talking to SB Nation's Stephen Godfrey on Setting the Edge this week, a podcast, about we were just talking about college football, and then we asked some questions about some of these quarterbacks that are getting hyped up and the college football perspective of them. And his whole case was just basically like, you know, it's August and people have to write about something. And, you know, Sam Darnold checked off the box of young quarterback with, you know, good raw talent, right? At a big school. And then he had a big moment in a big game, and he's returning to school. So if you're looking for someone, like, he's the quintessential player to hype up. I'm not sure if he's necessarily – I don't know if he's a top 10 pick right now, but I think he was – I mean, he was only a freshman last year. So it's hard to call him one way or another at this point.
So that interesting thing that you've been talking about, that you've sort of dove into specifically, is the level of competition. And that's not normally an issue that you run into with Power 5 quarterbacks. Normally, that's the issue that you find with guys like Josh Allen coming up this year, guys that aren't facing those big-name schools all the time. So why do you think that sort of hasn't been brought up a little bit more with Darnold?
I don't really know. I mean, I think people know how bad the Pac-12 was last year.
Like, at least on defense.
Yeah, at least on defense. I mean, I think people understand, like, Arizona State, Arizona, California – Oregon had a down year. UCLA had a down year. Notre Dame had a down year. Those were his starts other than his opening start against Utah, Colorado, and Washington. He ended up missing the Alabama and Stanford games, which would have given him a lot of attempts against bowl competition last regular season because he was the backup to Max Brown. But I don't know why people really aren't talking about it. I honestly think it's because I don't think people really – take grades coming into this season, like before the season, right? I don't think people hold it up as something that is like set in stone. I don't think anyone assumes that draft prospects who are going to be drafted in April look like they did last, you know, January or December.
Well, I think part of it too is like what Jackson was saying. You know, we don't typically think that Power 5 conference quarterbacks are going to have a level of competition problem. And so I think like, that's kind of what's happening with Darnold is we're really not processing. Like, we're kind of just pre-checking the box, like, oh, yeah, Power 5, of course he played really good teams. When you look at a lot of the defenses in the Pac-12, like, a lot of them fell apart outside of teams like, you know, Colorado and stuff like that.
There are, like, 10 Mountain West teams who have a better defense than Oregon did last year.
There are about 100 FBS teams that had a better defense than Oregon. So
Oregon is a bit of an outlier in this case. But, yes, that is – level of competition is something – that will, in theory, be addressed as Sam Darnold plays another year against teams that will supposedly, in theory, be better than the teams that they played in 2016. But, Kyle, you sort of mentioned situational awareness as going back to the positives for Darnold. You mentioned red zone and third downs. Derek, in your write-up, you sort of touched on how Darnold's really good in those run-pass option situations. So how impressive is that for a guy who was only a redshirt freshman, that sort of football intelligence, that ability to succeed in those really important and quick spots for someone who's so young?
Well, I think it's really important for him because kind of the elephant in the room that we haven't really touched on all that much is his throwing delivery. And it seems like Darnold, you know, between the RPOs and his ability to make crisp decisions in tighter spaces, he gets the ball out on time. And the fact that the ball is out on time allows him to mask that he has this longer delivery. And, you know, outperforming guys like Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, and Mitch Trubisky on third down and more than 7 yards passing as far as conversion rates. Obviously, some of that doesn't factor run after catch and those sorts of things. But Trubisky had a 41% conversion rate on third and seven or longer. Mahomes had 45. Deshaun Watson had 37. Darnold was at 45%, tied with Mahomes. And those were the three quarterbacks that went in the first round last year. So seeing that kind of positive result in such an essential part of the game of football offensively, I think it really speaks to what I had alluded to, the decision-making and seeing the field. And that's really rare for a guy that only has 10 career starts. So I think that bodes well if you're looking for, okay, how does this project into, because let's be honest, he has at least 12, 13, 14 more games to play at the college level, maybe more if he decides not to come out this year. So he is by no means a finished product. But if you're looking to project what you got last year and extrapolate out of that things that you want out of a potential franchise quarterback, I think that's a great place to start.
And what do you think about that delivery and the status of his offensive line, to be totally honest? Because even if you didn't like the USC guys coming out as draft prospects last year, they lost a lot of starts. And USC was I think they're ranked third in sack percentage, the best team in major college football, in FBS, or in Power 5. So, like, losing all those guys, you know, even Damian Mama, Zach Banner, who I was trying to walk Jackson off the bandwagon of last season. So just losing all those guys and then having a guy who has a long release, do you think that if there's one place that he's going to be, like, quote-unquote, like, exposed next year, do you think that that's the spot?
I think the two big tests for USC is weeks 2 and 3, Stanford and Texas. The rest of their schedule, you know, we've talked about the Pac-12 not being known for defensive prowess. There's not a lot of tests. You know, going through Western Michigan, Stanford, Texas, at Cal, at Washington State, Oregon State, home against Utah, who's one of the tougher defensive teams that they'll have to face, and they get them at home. So yeah, you know, the Stanford game specifically is, I think, if you're going to see him, quote unquote, get exposed, it's an offensive line with, you know, missing Chad Wheeler, missing Zach Banner, miss Damian Mama. Second week of the season, so those guys are still going to be green. There's chances for miscommunications. So it's really going to come down to when the back foot hits the ground and your drops, you got to be consistent with getting the ball out, or you have to be confident in your protection. So I think USC's biggest test and the biggest opportunity is to see, okay, are we going to see Darnold, quote unquote, come back to earth after the Rose Bowl, or is he going to really solidify his standing as a potential top-tier quarterback? It's going to be mid-September.
Well, I think even with the Washington game last year, we saw, like, some shades of the stuff that you're talking about that we might see some more problems with earlier. Like, I think Washington did a really good job of getting after him with 4. And then when they wanted to blitz, they kind of fried his brain a little bit. I don't think it was a bad game by Darnold per se, but I think if you want to find a game where you go look at some of the problems that Darnold might have versus his reaction to pressure and staying in the pocket and being able to throw with pressure and blitzes coming at him, I think Washington is kind of the game you look at it and, like, maybe try to project some concerns going forward with this new kind of shambled USC offensive line.
And the Washington game is sort of the outlier case to that bad schedule that he faced, because Washington's defense is obviously amazing last year. I mean, their secondary was elite. They were good on at sort of every level. So that's the one game that they played where they played really high level defensive players. And Darnold, like you said, Derek, didn't exactly have a bad game, but he wasn't as stellar, at least early on in the game, as he was in other opportunities. So, on that Washington game, though, he struggled early. He had a couple interceptions, I believe, right? Yeah, he had 2 interceptions, but then sort of late, he sort of returned to that where we saw him have such success, which was down the middle of the field to the tight end, Daniel Amater-Bebe. He had a couple nice touch throws towards the end. So even in such a short time and with such inexperience, did you see any abilities of Darnold to sort of learn as the season went on and understand defenses a little bit better and be able to sort of continue that progression that he's hoping to sort of make as a jumping point onto this next season?
I think it was more of like kind of a roller coaster. I don't think he had like this super solid progression. I mean, I think with little things, he kind of got better as the year went on and just like understanding like the quick hitting parts of the offense. But in terms of like handling pressure, I think it just kind of depended on the game. Like some games, it looked like he was great maneuvering the pocket and like dancing around guys in the pocket, finding room to throw from. Some games, he just looked a little bit uncomfortable and kind of frantic. And I think that's kind of just natural with a freshman. I think a freshman's just kind of going to have games where he doesn't look great, where he does look great. And that's just kind of the mixed bag that you get with a freshman. I think moving forward, we just want to see him kind of get a little bit more consistent with how he handles pressure, because we've seen when he's at his peak with stuff like that and making plays off script, I mean, he's excellent. So just to see him get a little bit better and more consistent at that would be nice.
Yeah, his ability to sort of move off script, like you said, and succeed outside the pocket, that's something that is obviously becoming a more and more common thing among NFL quarterbacks. It was obviously really common among college quarterbacks before, but with guys like Russell Wilson and guys like Deshaun Watson going in the first round, how much does that sort of add to his total portfolio as a potential quarterback prospect, Kyle?
I think it's more of a cherry on top than anything else. You are continuing to see teams put more of those moving pockets in place, cut the field in half and let guys read half the field. And sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. But as far as the actual skill, I think it's pretty far down my personal wish list on a quarterback, but you like to have a guy that doesn't get totally shell-shocked when he's forced off his spot. And you know, we've already kind of talked about how Darnold's very comfortable in those situations. I think it speaks to, without trying to project too much, I think it speaks to the speed of the game for him as far as, and again, this comes back down to the crispness of his decision-making. Derek's mentioned, you know, Washington did trap him a couple times. And that was, you know, the big test that he had last year. So, okay, like this Stanford game, not getting his wires crossed with trap coverage. But I think ultimately Darnold's ability to keep the offense on schedule is something that really speaks to the speed of the game, that ability to get comfortable moving outside the pocket, throwing on the move, and being comfortable in doing so is the same kind of byproduct of where he's at mentally between the years.
And then another issue that Darnold was sort of up and down with this past year was turnovers. In his first start against Utah, he had he didn't have an interception, but he had a couple fumbles, one of which was like on the goal line. And then he had 7 interceptions over his last 6 games, including the Rose Bowl. So are the interceptions and the turnovers as a whole, just the general ball security, is that something that you're particularly worried about, or is it something that you think is an easy sort of fix for him? Like, obviously, turnovers sort of manifest themselves in different ways for different quarterbacks, but what do you see as that having, what kind of effect do you see that having as for Darnold?
I'll take that one. So, like, at the end of the year is when he really had that stretch where he was throwing a lot of interceptions, but for a freshman quarterback, I'm honestly not that worried about the rate that he turns the ball over. Maybe if that elongated release ends up turning, you know, sacks this next year at USC after playing behind a very efficient offensive line, if nothing else, if he ends up getting sacked often and those turn into sack fumbles, I think that ends up becoming an issue. But as far as him putting the ball in places that he shouldn't, it's not that big of a deal. Even some of those interceptions that he threw against Power 5 competition, it was things that, like, it went off the hands of his receiver and bounced into a DB's hand, you know, a safety's hand further down the field. The thing that I'm more worried about is Mark Dulgarian, who used to work at Optimum Scouting and now works for NFL Network, he lives in Los Angeles. He went to USC practices this summer, and he was saying that Darnold isn't a practice player, is what he said, which I guess that's why he wasn't able to win out the starting job last year instead of Max Brown. But I think if he's not progressing, like if we're treating him as someone who is draft eligible, and he's the exact same guy that he was last year, I'm not sure that guy is a first-round pick. I understand hyping up a freshman, first year of legitimate playing time because he did what he did in his first year. But if we're treating this guy as, you know, if we're taking out age and just evaluating his talent in a vacuum, I don't think that he's necessarily a guy who should be going top 10.
Okay.
I think that's fair. Especially again, because we have talked about, you know, we're taking a snapshot of right now, and there is a much larger sample size that we do have to draw out of. So I think Justice is certainly fair in saying, you know, if Darnold comes out and he's the same guy, like the big things that I wanted to see from him were, you know, increased efficiency with his muscle memory and polish with his throwing mechanics and cleaning up that throwing motion. If all those things are the same, then yeah, now we got a really big problem if he ends up declaring, because you don't know where along the progression trajectory he's currently falling. Maybe he's stagnant. Maybe he does have increased growth, but for whatever reason, the offensive conditions do not bring that out. So there's a lot of ways that this can go that could ultimately, you know, affect his potential quote unquote draft stock one way or another. So it's not as though he's a layup, and I'm really high on Darnold. I think he's got great traits. I think he's excellent between the ears. But justice is fair in saying that, you know, with a whole other season at least left to play, there's a lot of ways that this narrative can change very quickly.
So what's the biggest potential thing that could be holding him back from being a success in the NFL? If you think he's strong between the ears, if you think he has that natural arm talent, but the progression is what you're worrying about. What's the biggest thing that could stop him from being an NFL success?
I kind of want to see him bridge a little bit of a gap just in terms of like what he's capable of, because we talked about it before. Like, he's really good in the short game, RPOs, like double slants, like just like short concepts where he needs to his back foot hits the ground and the ball's out. He's excellent at that stuff. I think in this class, he's probably the best at that right now. And he's also an excellent playmaker. Like, when stuff kind of goes haywire, he has to move out of the pocket and scan the field and make throws on the run. I think he's also really, really good at that. But the problem is I kind of have a little bit concern of the way he'll stand in the pocket and try to scan the field and, like, hit backside reads. Like, I have a little bit of concerns with the way that he does that. And I don't think he's as accurate down the field as he needs to be right now. So I think there's just a couple of, holes in his game that he kind of needs to put some duct tape over and at least get to where he's a little bit more functional. And maybe it's just that he's a freshman and just needs to understand the offense a little bit more. And that might help with his timing throwing deep, his timing throwing over the middle, and timing getting to his reads and stuff. Because there were definitely times last year where you would see he would just kind of miss a linebacker clearing out of the middle that he should have known was clearing out, or times where he would be looking deep and wouldn't pull the trigger until it was too late. And that might just be an offense comfort thing. So I think I want to see him take that step forward and show that he can do those things a little bit better and more consistently, and just kind of bridge that gap between just being a short game guy and a playmaker to being a guy who can do everything that you need a quarterback to be able to do.
Especially with where the narrative is with, you know, his potential. You know, we're talking about potential, like, quote-unquote Andrew Luck-style quarterback prospect here. No, Derek's spot on with that as well. It's... I had mentioned polish is one big thing for me, and I think bridging the gap is a much more effective way of wording what needs to happen here and where he needs to, you know, just tighten the screws and be more consistent across the board all the times in all conditions.
Yeah, consistency is definitely one of the things that he struggled with last year, which is not necessarily unexpected from a quarterback who is so young. But for the two weaknesses that everybody seems to be sort of gravitating towards are the inexperience and the throwing motion. Obviously, there's issues with polish, like you guys are saying, but which of those, with the inexperience thing, is sort of going to feel like it's going to answer itself because he's going to over double the sample size that we already have to scouting him. And you sort of touched on this a little bit already, Kyle, about how if the ball is out on time, then really what's the issue with the throwing motion? But we've seen guys with awkward – we've seen sort of both ends of the spectrum. Guys like Tim Tebow who have had those throwing motions, and obviously his issues were not limited to the throwing motion. I mean, we've seen guys like Phillip Rivers who have sort of the slingshot delivery and they can just sort of get it done. Where do you guys think Darnold sort of falls on that spectrum of the throwing motion being a detriment to him or just something you just sort of notice about his quarterback play?
I think he's got to be closer to Rivers than Tebow, because I think Tebow's thing – that ends up becoming a functional thing. I don't think Darnold really has an issue with that. Like we said, he's on time. He's not getting a lot of sack fumbles or anything like that. He's not necessarily throwing a lot of deep plays where you have to be like super in sync, as opposed to, like we talked about, like double slants and things like that, where you could just throw a dart real quick. But that's mostly an aesthetic issue to me at this point, instead of, you know, it's something that you see on Google Images. It's not something that really impacts what he does on the video.
Honestly, I think more the mechanical issue with him is his footwork. Because, like I said earlier, I don't think he does a very good job of setting up the deep ball. I think when he's in the pocket and, like, getting to second and third reads, he doesn't always do the best job of moving his feet to a way that's functional. And it's weird because, like, when he goes off script and, like, scrambles a little bit, he's so good at resetting his feet after he's, like, moved dramatically. But just in terms of, like, moving on rhythm, I think he has some issues. And I think that's more of a detriment to him right now than his throwing motion is. I mean, I think Justice is right. Like, it's kind of just like an aesthetic. Like, you see a picture of it and everyone freaks out, but it's not really hurting his game all that much.
right? And the other thing here, as Justice has mentioned, is the potential turnovers. You know, even though that ball is exposed, because of when he's making the decision and the style of offense that he likes to play and he's most comfortable right now, he's not threatened with a lot of bodies around him challenging the ball when it hits its lowest point. So that's something like, you know, you'll see pass rushers running by and all they have to do is reach out their hand and they might be able to knock the ball loose. You didn't see a lot of that from Darnold. So that throwing motion, I don't think like the other guy that gets tagged for this all the time is Blake Bortles, but Bortles and Tebow, I thought both of them had like slow mental processing and, you know, they're slow to react even when it's an early read. And that's why some of these balls are contested, or in Bortles' case, you know, you go back to the preseason game this year, he's staring down a primary read on third down and long. And, you know, those, that just can't happen. If a defender's sitting in zone coverage, reading your eyes, and you never move off the primary read and your back foot hits the ground and that ball dips, like that ball's going to get contested. And I don't see a lot of that from Darnold. So again, with how he plays and where he's comfortable, I think the throwing motion's really mitigated.
I think USC fans and Jets fans are happy to hear you saying that he's not similar to Blake Bortles or Tim Tebow. But if there is sort of an NFL comp that you could provide for him, I know the comps are obviously don't paint the complete picture of a player and sometimes they're a bit forced, but I'm going to force you guys to do them anyways. Is there sort of a current NFL comp, whether it's, it doesn't have to be his ceiling comp, it just sort of, or it can be, just where what guy do you see that are currently in the NFL that sort of he could project to being similar to?
And Jackson, you should have hit us with this before the podcast started, dude.
Yeah, that's a tough one on the spot, especially if you're guys so young.
I wanted to see if you guys could come up with one quick, but that's fair. That's fair. It's a tough question.
I think for me, it would have to be, like, I know when I was watching him, aesthetically, it's the Rivers comparison just because of the weird passing motion, but I don't think he's close to that level of execution right now. Like, you see Philip Rivers going against cover three teams or cover three heavy teams, and it's automatic torching down the field and across the middle. And I don't think that Sam Darnold's necessarily there yet. But I also don't think any of these guys who've come out in the past two or three draft classes are anywhere close to what Darnold is. I think he's a pretty unique player.
So that's really interesting to hear you say, Justice, that he is so unique, because we see guys like that in with the broad stroke of the brush, sort of guys that are big, have the big arm, can have sort of that moving out of the pocket ability. But when you actually watch him, you don't necessarily glean like one guy's sort of a stylistic comparison.
I think that
he's not a big arm guy who's just like gunning it down the field. Like, he's not a guy you're going to compare to like Carson Palmer by any means. You know what I mean? Even though they both went to USC, and he obviously does have a strong arm, but it's not like he's necessarily testing the deep ball or trying to hit long corner routes or something like that on a consistent basis.
Right. Derek, did you have some?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's like a full-on comparison, but like, so with quarterbacks, I think you have to imagine like how would you construct an offense for these guys. I don't think you would really construct an offense for Sam Darnold much differently than you would for Mitch Trubisky. I think they're both guys that were really good in the short game, have good enough arms to do short game stuff, and can like, they're not really great deep passers, but if you're going like shot plays on like play action, I think they can do that. Neither of them set themselves up well for like other types of like full-on vertical concepts. Both are really good on the move. Both can throw very well, comfortably on the move, and they're both good at kind of scrambling on the move. They're both good athletes. So I think like aesthetically they look a little bit different, but in terms of like how you would construct your offense around these guys, I think it looks very similar to like what you would do with Mitch Trubisky.
I like that one. That's kind of an interesting comparison with the guy who is obviously just taken extremely high in the draft. So obviously we're a ways away and you don't really know how Darnold's going to progress, like we've said. But if you had to say today, where do you see Darnold being drafted in the 2018 class? Whether that means top 10 or whether it means where among the quarterbacks do you think he gets drafted?
I really think the big arm of Josh Allen here is really going to swoo a lot of NFL guys. I think Darnold's a I think Darnold's a first round caliber player if he comes out and does the things that I think all of us, all three of us, and we've kind of expressed we're personally at different points with how we feel about Darnold, but if he comes out and checks the boxes that we all kind of agree need to be checked, I think he has to be a top 10 quarterback. If you're talking about, you know, look at some of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL right now and tell me some of these guys don't need fresh blood and a potential young franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I think he obviously has the potential to go first overall. I mean, we if you look at his trajectory from where he is at his freshman season relative to other first overall picks, I mean, he's blowing a lot of these guys out of the water already, you know what I mean? But if he is able to secure that spot is a different question, because like you said, you brought up Josh Allen. There's Josh Rosen at UCLA. There's even, you know, Jarrett Stidham, who's gotten some hype from Auburn. He was a transfer from Baylor. There's a lot of guys in this quarterback class, at least in terms of like the competitive names that we could see at the top of the draft. It's not necessarily like last year where Pat Mahomes and who else came out of nowhere. I mean, Deshaun Kizer was a second round pick, was elevated to a first overall pick after the first week of the season, and he wasn't even named a starter going into that. Mitch Trubisky was a virtual unknown. There are a lot of names right now, so there's a lot of potential and a lot of potential for movement for all of these guys.
Derek, I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because of all the guys who gave sort of rankings for this piece, you're one of the only ones who didn't put him at the top. You have him in tier two with Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, Josh Rosen in tier one, and then Darnold and Baker Mayfield in tier two. So why did you sort of place him there, and do you think that he sort of rises up into tier one by the time the draft comes around, or do you think he sort of remains in that tier two spot?
Yeah, so mostly putting him there was more about, I think with those other guys, I'm pretty comfortable with like how I feel what that type of player is, and so it's a little bit easier for me to project. Like with Darnold, I like him. I think he has plenty of tools like to be on this first round track, you know, this top 10 track, and I think he should get there. I just have some pause with, like I said, it's like I'm not confident if he's going to polish up the way that I want him to. And like I said, you know, the Washington game, especially for me, it wasn't necessarily bad, but there were like some chinks in the armor that I'm a little bit concerned about moving forward. And I want to see him clean those things up before I solidify him as like, you know, a first overall type guy. I think he can get there. It was just, for me, it was kind of like how I feel about Mayfield. Like he's got some of the tools. There's just some things I want to see for sure that he can do. I don't want it to sound like I don't like him. I like him. He's just, it's kind of, summer's always a weird time, and he's not the guy I'm going to bet my paycheck on, I guess is the way I would put it.
It's interesting that Mayfield sort of ends up in that same tier for you. And Justice, you have Mayfield in a tie with Darnold as well as Mason Rudolph for that number one spot. Because at least for me, a guy who hasn't done as deep of a dive on these quarterbacks outside of Darnold as you guys have, it seems like Mayfield and Darnold have some sort of stylistic similarities as these guys who have the ability to sort of break outside and play make in chaos. So is that something that those guys have a lot of similar traits on a deep dive, or is it just sort of on the surface that they're these white playmaking quarterbacks at big schools?
There are some similarities. I mean, I don't think you would mistake them, right? Like you wouldn't see, if you put Baker Mayfield in a white helmet and a white jersey with just like a black number on it, you're not mistaking him for Sam Darnold at all. Like aesthetically, they are very different. But you're right. I mean, both of them can move around, make their own plays, have very strong arms. I think Baker Mayfield's arm is probably very underrated. Both were tremendously productive. When I did that, when I ran those numbers on Setting Edge for like what every Power 5 quarterback looks like against bowl level competition, they were some of the highest ranked guys on there. I mean, Baker Mayfield just broke Russell Wilson's efficiency mark last year for a single season in college football. I think he was a Heisman runner-up too. I believe that's true. So like very efficient guy. I would say the biggest difference, honestly, is like very large things for NFL teams. So the biggest difference is probably the height, right? Baker Mayfield is under the 6'2" mark, and I think everyone believes the same. Darnold above that. The second is their age, right? So we're talking about a guy who played last year as a redshirt freshman and a guy who played last year as a redshirt junior and is going into his fifth year and also had to transfer out to get a starting job in Baker Mayfield. And then we're talking about Sam Darnold, who is like quintessential. I mean, there's pieces on like Bleacher Report and SB Nation, all sorts of stuff where they've like talked to his family members and things like that. And he's like the most normal person to grow up from Orange County ever, apparently. And then you have Baker Mayfield, who was arrested this past offseason. So I think those three things are pretty big, you know, non-on-field factors that go against Mayfield and go for Darnold in the eyes of NFL evaluators.
All right. Well, as we sort of wrap this up, do you guys have any Sam Darnold hot takes? Or here's another one. Do you have any quick thoughts on Lamar Jackson as sort of the most polarizing guy in both college football and as potential NFL quarterback? You see things thrown around about how they should switch him to receiver or running back. I think that's a bunch of nonsense, personally. But what are your guys' quick thoughts on Lamar Jackson?
I know I'm higher on him than most. I think he's a lot smarter than people are giving him credit for. And I know part of that is the media kind of does this to black quarterbacks all the time. But I think Jackson is like a particular case. I mean, he won the Heisman last year, and people are saying he can't read coverages. Like, you don't win the Heisman the way that he did, not being able to read coverages at all. I mean, that was such a vertical offense, asking him to drop deep so often and play out of the shotgun and throw like 15, 20 yards down the field that, like, you can't play in that style of offense and not be able to read coverages, at least at an adequate level. And I think he showed so many times that he was good at moving linebackers with his eyes. He was good at understanding like when a dig was going to clear over a linebacker and under his safety and stuff like that. I think he was so good at seeing blitzes coming in and knowing where to put the ball. Granted, I definitely think he needs to improve his accuracy because, you know, he'll have plays where he'll read something right and just miss the throw. So I think he obviously needs to clean that up. But I just think he's so much smarter than people are giving him credit for.
Yeah, I actually think that, you know, for lack of a better term, it's BS for people to say, oh, he's got to move to wide receiver. Did he miss some throws last year? Yeah, he missed some throws with accuracy and he missed some throws down the field. But ultimately, he played at Louisville, which did not have a good offensive line, and he played tough. He played from the pocket. He played on the move. He made a ton of things happen. We've kind of talked about the NFL kind of, you know, becoming more accepting of guys that win with their legs, and Jackson certainly has the ability to do that. He's bulked up this offseason. Reports are he's gained about 10 pounds of muscle, and he looks good. I know there were a couple pictures that circulated on social media of Jackson, and he looked thicker. So I think that was a big thing, listed at 206, you know, to see him, you know, add some bulk to his frame and not rob himself of where he is at his best using his athleticism. He's got a cannon for an arm. I think realistically his best shot to make it in the NFL is as a quarterback. And he's got some really, really nice physical traits.
Yeah. And just, I think you guys hit everything, the nail on the head with everything you guys have talked about. The only thing that I'll add to this is, if you look at Lamar Jackson, what he was able to do in the passing game in like the first 8 weeks of the season compared to the last like 4 weeks of the season, it's night and day. And the reason for that was the offensive line. The offensive line really did end up like, I think they gave up as many sacks in like the last three games of the regular season as they did the rest of the regular season combined. So it does seem like offensive line play and Louisville having that drop off at the end of the year had a significant impact in Lamar Jackson's, you know, production and all that last year. So I just wonder more so on like him as an individual talent. I feel like people have a pretty decent grasp on what he can and cannot do at this point. But just like what type of hype we're going to be going into based off of production. Cause I think, you know, it would be disingenuous to say that, you know, production has no impact on how NFL teams look at some of these guys. And if Louisville's offensive line looks more like it did at the end of last year than it did at the beginning of last year, that's probably a situation where we see Lamar Jackson come back to school.
Well, that's great, guys. I appreciate the sort of off-script conversation. Now, just before we wrap things up, feel free to pub yourself, your outlets, any interesting, fun content you guys have up. Kyle, I can start with you, sort of go around the horn.
Sure. Yeah, we've been plugging away at really establishing a basis of this potential 2018 NFL draft class all summer. I got a staff of six guys with me over at ndtscouting.com, and they've been an absolute blast. They've worked their butt off. So feel free, swing over, check us out. We've got a Power 5 encyclopedia, every Power 5 team. We've got notable prospects listed with links to any and all content that we may have put together over the course of the summer. So really useful tool if you're kind of turning on a college football game by chance and are lost with an NFL draft focus, who you want to look for. So that's kind of sticky to the top of the page. It's something I'm really proud of. So if you guys do swing over, be sure to check that out.
And I'll vouch for that too. I ended up going on the site. I think you guys dropped that last week at some point, the encyclopedia.
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks, Justice. Yeah,
I went on that and I saw you guys had an evaluation on my son, Maurice Hurst. Dang, I'm going to get it the third time. The D tackle from Michigan, who I'm a pretty big fan of. I ended up reading it, and I pretty much agreed with what you guys said. As far as me, catch my stuff on Football Guys. I'm going to be doing NFL 1000 for Bleacher Report, evaluating every defensive lineman in the NFL. And follow Setting Edge at Setting Edge on Twitter. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Justice over at Bleacher Report doing NFL 1000. I have the linebackers. I'm doing quarterback stuff at 2QBs by their fantasy draft guide specifically for 2QB leagues, but it works for everything else. You know, it's all the data and stuff there that really matters. Doing some stuff with Optimum Scouting, kind of some behind the scenes stuff right now, and then some more written content once we really get into the thick of the season. That's about it on my end.
Well, awesome, guys. I appreciate you taking the time, and perhaps we'll revisit sometime midway through the season or after the season ends again on Darnold.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.